Thank you very much. As you heard, I ought to begin by acknowledging that my presence here tonight constitutes my first serious connection with the Speech and Communication Association, and I have little doubt that the SCA will survive the encounter. I have even less doubt, by the way, that I will be the chief beneficiary of this encounter, especially because I plan to stay around long enough to hear people other than myself do some talking. And this is not said, by the way, as a ritualistic self-deprecation. As you'll hear in a moment, my colleagues, the students, and I at NYU are engaged in a kind of a perilous adventure in the field of communication, and we really do need the advice and empathetic criticism and psychic support that only the members of this organization are qualified to give. And so, though I'm the keynote speaker at your conference, I come not to bring you the word, which I don't have, but rather a whole bunch of question marks, which probably you don't need. Nevertheless, I do so really in the sincere hope that some of you, by knowing about our situation, might be able to help us find our way to a few creative solutions. Now, specifically, what I'd like to do is tell you about the foolhardy, presumptuous, and exhilarating effort we're making at NYU to elaborate a new perspective for studying communication, one that might still make some sense 20 or 30 years from now. In effect, what we're trying to do is work within a new structure for understanding the communication process, a structure that reflects the powerful trend toward reorganizing knowledge that is associated with the ecological perspective. Now, as you may be aware, universities are not always sympathetic to such reorganizing efforts, perhaps because with age they suffer from hardening of the categories. As Kenneth Boulding says in his wonderful book, The Image, it will be a long time before the restructuring of knowledge, which now seems to be underway, will be reflected in the organization of universities. Indeed, it is difficult to visualize now exactly what the appropriate organization might be. But there can be little doubt that this restructuring will eventually have to be recognized officially. Until then, the new structures, as new structures have always done, will have to live in an underworld of deviant professors, gifted amateurs, and moderate crackpots. Well, I'd like to skip the question as to which of these categories I most rightly belong. It's enough to say that at the School of Education at NYU, a most hospitable reception has been given to those of us who have shown a serious interest in doing something unusual in communication. At almost every turn, encouragement has been freely offered by administrators and faculty, and we have even been allowed to invent a new name for our subject, media ecology. And one of the more delightful rewards we have reaped so far is in the fact that both our name and our course of study, such as it is, were adopted whole by Oxford University last summer. We were encouraged, too, by the fact that Harvard University published this year the final report of its program on technology and society. Since that program was established to begin inquiries into many of the same matters we at NYU are concerned with, well, we've almost begun to feel that we're part of the official knowledge establishment. As many of you know, even those in the academic underworld need stroking. And to receive positive reinforcement from the two greatest universities in the Western world, well, it's almost too much to bear. But one must do more than bear it. One must be suspicious of it. All the Oxfords and Harvards and NYUs in the world cannot change the fact that communication as a science and or discipline just barely exists, if it exists at all. And I think our colleagues from more settled disciplines are right in viewing us with circumspection. As Gregory Bateson put it in his book,